live from the Third Coast. It is our time to focus on where genealogy and spirit connect. A time to focus on our connection with ourselves and our past. Here's your host, Susan E. King.
Hello, everybody. We are here from the Third Coast. And if you listen to the music, that's a little Steel Pans. And spent the weekend in Kima, Texas at a Steel Pan Festival. Excuse me. Where I played for on and off for about 12 hours, so if I don't have a voice, that's probably why. But in any event, we're here, and we're here for another hour of Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. And one of the things, I don't know if you all have been watching the new NBC series called Who Do You Think You Are? But there have been three episodes so far, and Sarah Jessica Parker, Lisa Kudrow, Emmett Smith, well, actually four episodes, and Matthew Broderick, have really taken us on some interesting journeys through different types of genealogical research. And one of the things that I've noticed is they make it look so simple. The stars show up and they miraculously find all these records, and some of them are not digitized. They're in archives all over the world. So it makes things look a little bit more simpler than they are. But, you know, we are fortunate today in the genealogical world to have a lot of online resources like Ancestry.com, Footnote.com, WorldArchives.com that really bring to light a lot of the records that we used to have to sit and use microfilm readers to read the microfilm. So we have a lot of online resources for genealogical research, but when you're in the business and you're doing this day in and day out, you know, there are times where we run into situations where the records we really need to break open a family line or break open a case, as the case may be, just aren't online. So we're really, you know, pleased and glad to have Dean Richardson with us, because he's put together a brand new website that is really an online resource for online resources. That's not a mouthful, but I actually found them a couple months ago, and I've been using it extensively, so here's one of my best kept secrets in doing genealogical work, because what they have done is put together teams of researchers who have access to records that you cannot find online, and who are doing lookups. And, you know, when you're paying for a lookup, as one would do, whether you're a genealogical researcher or you're a professional researcher, as I am, it can be very cost savings and time savings to have someone do something real quick. And, Dean, I don't know how many records I've had done with y'all over the last month or so, but I think every one of them has been just an incredible resource for me and for my clients. So, welcome.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me, Susan.
Well, we're glad you're here, and why don't you give us a little bit of background about what GenLighten is all about? You can find it at www.genlighten.com, and that's GenLighten.com.
I'd be happy to. To be honest, I'm not the expert researcher in our family. It's actually my wife, Cynthia. She's been running our local family history center here and answering questions and queries for people for about 4 or 5 years. And it came to a point where she got enough phone calls, enough email inquiries, she decided it was time to build a website of her own. And we live in the Chicago area, and most of the questions she got were about Chicago records. And she'd done a fair amount of research on her own lines here, learned some tricks and some nice things that she could easily track down here locally. And so she taught herself HTML and CSS and built herself a small website called ChicagoGenealogy.com. And she began fielding lookup requests. And at the beginning, it was mostly about Chicago death certificates, because at that time, about 5 years ago, they were primarily available just through going to the county courthouse or the county clerk's office or finding them on microfilm at local family history centers, and that's where we had access. So she set up this site. People requested records from her. She would scan them and email them to her clients. And before long, people started saying, gee, this is great. This is wonderful for Chicago records, but I got the same kind of questions about Boston or about Ireland or about Kansas. Can you help me find records there? Do you know somebody who can do the kind of lookup service you're doing there with tracking down offline records? And at the time, we didn't know how to answer that question. But as we started getting more and more queries like that, we decided it made sense to try to build something. And GenLighten really is the outgrowth that it's an attempt to replicate my wife's lookup retrieval and digitization service all across the country and across the world, ultimately.
Well, I can tell you that the people that are doing lookups have been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, some of the information, you know, because of privacy laws and things like that, are never going to be available online or won't be for 75-plus years. So, you know, the concept behind this is, as I see it, is that there are people that have access to either microfilm or actually access to archives in their local areas where records are held that you really can't get anywhere else. Is that that's correct?
Pretty much. You could be somebody who simply visits the local county courthouse maybe once every couple weeks because you're doing your own research or because friends have asked for your help. And you're making that trip anyway. Maybe you live close. Maybe it's half an hour drive or whatever. But you say to yourself, gee, I could make a little extra income, help with my passion for family history research by offering to retrieve documents for others. You get to the point where you know where the films are, where the paper records are. You have a good relationship with the people who run the place. And you've figured out by, during some years, maybe some of the records are out of order and you have to go into a particular, you know, place in the archives to find them. There are tricks. There are pieces of experience you gain that allow you to do that kind of thing efficiently. And finding people like that, local experts in their particular records, that's what we're trying to do. And it could be someone who's a professional like yourself, Susan, who's been doing this for many years and learned these things as a result, or it could be somebody who's maybe hasn't certified as a professional yet, but is simply a lot of depth of knowledge of their local records. Whatever the background might be, these kind of people are unique, and they're hard to find. You can't just type into Google, track me down the person who knows this county courthouse or this local historical society's archives inside and out. They don't tend to have websites often. And so our marketplace seeks to find those people and then give you a one-stop shop experience that allow you to track them down, see ratings and reviews that their clients have given them, and connect with them and then be able to request the record and receive it all through the website.
So let's talk about the topics and the types of records that you have people doing lookups, just so that people can get a broad understanding. I mean, we've talked about death records.
Sure.
But you know, I mean, genealogy really, and Dean, you and I both know this, is really made up of a compilation of different types of records that yield different types of information that helps us put the stories of people's lives back together. So let's go through some of the lists that you have people doing lookups for, just so that people can understand the
Sure.
types of records that we all use, really, to do our work.
Good point. Certainly, vital records in the traditional sense, birth, marriage, and death, are popular because they often will have information about parents, and that's really helpful if you're seeking to take a family and identify, you know, move that line further back. But often it's nowhere near that simple. The record doesn't have the parents' names, and or you're not even to the point where you can. You have the right dates that will allow you to track that down. So other records that can be really helpful are immigration records, for instance, immigration and naturalization records. And many of them are held in either federal, state, or county repositories. They can sometimes give information on where someone came from in Europe, for instance, and even a village of origin, and that might assist you in trying to cross the Atlantic, and in some cases to take research further. Land records are another area that we have a number of people offering lookups for. We have just someone from Northern Ireland just to offer land record searches for Northern Ireland just yesterday. There's a situation where you can track a family down based on who owned property, see who lived next to somebody else who owned the adjoining property, and you can also then look at probate records to see how property might have been passed down from generation to generation. That's often a clue to who were someone's descendants, who was close to the family, who ultimately carried on in terms of land ownership, and that can be extremely helpful as you're trying to look at parallel lines. Genealogists, though beginning genealogists tend to be focused on a pedigree chart kind of view of straight back, parent to child, child to parent, but collateral lines, finding people's siblings and working both backward and forward in those lines is often a way to get around brick walls. And land records, wills and probate records can often point in that direction. And those are all some of the records that some of the lookup providers on GenLighten offer to search and retrieve for you. Others might be, for instance, obituaries or city directories. These are pretty popular, too, because they can tend to have a lot of information. City directories can be a substitute for the census in some cases, and obituaries often will give, though it isn't always necessarily reliable, but they will often give a detailed picture of someone's life, and that can be very satisfying to find in making connections with ancestors. So those are some of the records we offer.
Right, and, you know, one of the things, my little mind lightened up a little bit when you talked about Northern Ireland. I'm actually working two or three cases. And interestingly enough, there was a naturalization record that you all did for me recently for an immigrant from Northern Ireland, where the county of birth was totally different than what this individual's father had told him. So one of the things I've noticed about, you know, Irish research, since that's not really a specialty area of mine, is that the names are so common. And you go into some of the Irish archives, you know, there might be 100 people with the same exact name.
Yep. Thomas and Matthews is my Irish ancestor.
There you go. Patrick Stapleton. I can't tell you how many Patrick Stapletons there are. So, Dean, let's talk a little bit maybe about the types of people that would be providers for GenLighten,
sure,
and how they can really serve and help others.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about that. And we started out thinking to ourselves that the people who would want to offer research help to others on our site would be the retired librarians, for instance, or a grandmother who was eager to take what they were really good at and passionate about and translate that into a modest source of additional income. And just people just like that have signed up, and those are a significant portion of the people who we have doing research. But there have been a variety of others, too. We've had college students, so grad students in history, for instance, who are looking for practical experience with their own local records and with research techniques that allow them to answer questions that their clients might have. We've also found people who are, like yourselves, professional genealogists and who are looking for an opportunity to get connections with additional possible hourly paying clients, and who are looking for kind of a lead generation opportunity there by doing lookups, by establishing themselves as reliable and responsive, and having expertise in a particular area or a particular set of records. they find that people, after they've gotten a few documents from them, say, gee, you know, I have this longer-term problem I'm really trying to solve. Would you be open to tackling that for me? And we're very happy to see that kind of thing happen. Enlighten is primarily focused on document retrieval rather than hourly research. But we like to see our providers get that opportunity to bring in clients to their professional services that way. So there's a wide spectrum from, as I said, from the student to the experienced researcher, all providing lookups from among the records they have access to and that they have some expertise with. So it's really accessible to pretty much everyone with some interest and passion for family history.
And from the client point of view, what is it usually, what is the cost range, for example, for having a record retrieved through one of your providers?
Sure. We're still very young in the service. It's been maybe up and running for about 3 months now. And so there's a fairly wide range of costs. But for the most part, it seems like records run somewhere between $5 and $25 each, depending on the complexity of the search involved and the amount of copying or scanning that needs to be done. Also, the difficulty involved in tracking the record down plays into the price as well. My wife, for years now, has been retrieving death certificates and church records from our local family history center for right around $5 to $6 each. That's a function of the fact that she lives 3 minutes from the repository. They're all on microfilm, and she knows each of the films just about like the back of her hand. So for her, it's a very efficient process, and she gets enough requests that when she makes a trip there in the car, she's there for 4 or 5 hours doing 40 requests. And so her overhead is very small, and she can charge a low price. On the other hand, you'll have the researcher who lives an hour from a very valuable repository in a fairly rural part of Kansas or Nebraska, and you know who's getting a single request is going there maybe once every 2 weeks, and though the copying costs might be very small, their gas, their travel, and their time is such that they might need to charge more along the lines of $20 for a record that would have relatively similar information. It's just it reflects the distance traveled, the frequency of the requests. So in some cases, prices are actually going to be lower in a place where in a bigger city where there's a higher density of people interested in the results. That's one thing that controls the costs. Now, some processes are multi-step. For instance, we have a provider who offers adoption related lookup in that she can look in a law directory for the Chicago area and find cases that might point to some interesting information about an adoption situation. She has to go through multiple steps of looking in an index, finding a particular entry, looking up a file to see if that file has anything interesting in it. This might be done on two different days or two different trips, and so her prices might be more in the $50 to $75 range. But that's there's only one or two situations that are really that high. Most are in the $5, $10, $20 range typically.
And the turnaround time is you know, a lot of it has been at what, anywhere from 24 hours in some cases to perhaps
a couple weeks, yeah. So again, if the volume of requests and the closeness to the repository is such that the provider simply is there anyway, the turnaround time can easily be that day or within a couple days. My wife brings her laptop with her. She gets requests via email as she's at the Family History Center, and she can sometimes have them to people within 4 hours. On the other hand, if the request comes in on a Saturday evening and the repository isn't open again until Tuesday, it's obviously going to be a little while. Most people post on their lookup offerings on our site the turnaround time for their particular request, and it might be as long as 2 weeks, depending on how far they have to drive and how often they might get requests. The more you submit, though, the more it makes it worth their while to go more frequently. And that's one of the things we're trying to help providers with, is get enough requests that they can go frequently and reduce their turnaround time.
Right. And you know, a professional like myself who is, you know, trying to crack a case, you know, paying $5 to $10 or even $20 for a record that may open up something, is far my time and the client than for me to go and actually go do the look up myself. Truly.
That's a good point.
It really is. I mean, it's not my time to, you know, travel an hour to go look at a microfilm that I have to order and wait 2 weeks to
That's right. You're just being efficient about how you use your time and resources for your client, and that makes perfect sense. I think I want to mention too that, I mean, many people enjoy the trip, right? For them, it's kind of people take genealogy vacations, and we're not trying to eliminate that or say no, don't make that 500-mile drive. You know, we've done that and it's been fun. But we're saying, if you want to keep your research momentum going, you want a quick question answered, and you don't want to wait 3 or 4 weeks to get a response, we can often get it to you within days so that you can keep going, keep the momentum, keep in the flow of the research. And that often, people tell us, really makes a difference in their success, their progress, their satisfaction in the research they're doing.
You know, and you bring that up too, because you know, one record really can pull you back, you know, to the ancestries or to the online resources, and you know, off you go, and you might spend, you know, the rest of the time without having to really go pull anything else. But you know, when you get stuck, it's a real stuck.
That's true. It's definitely an iterative process. You start online, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, I wouldn't consider not having an ancestry subscription. I always start there when I'm researching a new problem, and then when I get to a point where I need an offline record, again, our providers are a great resource for that. But you're right. Inevitably, that record points me to a new hypothesis or a new question I want to try to answer, and that will take me back online to any of the great resources that are available there. And so it's a spiral, circular process of online, offline, problem solving, thinking, pondering, talking to the client or the individual who you're helping, and little by little making your way along the path to greater understanding. That's part of what makes it fun.
It is, and you know, having watched all the Who Do You Think You Are shows, I mean, it's you know, it's been very interesting to watch some of these stars go through the process. I mean, obviously, they're not going through the research process at the same level that we as individuals would do for ourselves, because they're having people do it for them. But you know, they I think the Matthew Broderick was quite interesting, because you know, his research happened to solve a mystery of a unmarked grave since the Civil War in a particular cemetery. And it was just awesome. So, you know, it's, the whole process of genealogy is so intriguing and exciting and, you know, frustrating and,
like any soil problem, yes.
Yes. But, you know, Jen Lighten, how do you pronounce it, Jen Lighten, right?
We do. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, really is one of these really valuable of really getting through some of these frustrating situations that you might run into when you're doing your own genealogy. Particularly, I think, you know, the naturalization records are very difficult to get your hands on. Death records are very difficult to get your hands on. Marriage records are very difficult to get your hands on. Records, you know, or a
not so much.
Every web online resource there is, but you know, it's these records that really have some of the real true guts of what you need to move a line forward. A maiden name, for example, a place, an address. You know, it's really amazing. You know, for example, I think I did a city directory, had someone do a quick city directory lookup for me, and, you know, we had a naturalization, we had a passenger list that had a listing for a name, had an initial, and this person was going to her uncle's at this address, and all it took was a lookup in a city directory to find this particular person, you know, during that time period at that address. Cool. And that made the link, you know, that really set us off so that we could do the census work and
you
know, put families together, because when we found this particular person at that address, we also found two or three other people at that address,
yes,
a whole family. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that I think are pretty exciting about, you know, genealogy, and pretty exciting about, too, the, you know, the records that, you know, we can't always seem to get our hands on when we really need them. And that's really the beauty of what you all are offering.
Well,
so, you know, the process is, and I'll let you explain it, I've done it on both sides,
sure,
is that, you know, someone would log into your site, and it's www.jenlighten.com, and they would register. There's no charge, correct?
Correct. It's on a subscription service, so you can register for free.
Okay. And so there are two ways to go about doing this. Number one, you can look and see who is offering what services.
Right. So you might find, you might select a locality where you think the record might have covered. Maybe that's, in our case, Cook County, Illinois. It's broken down by, country, state, and county. So if you know the county, that's really helpful. You'd pick the county and narrow down our list of providers and the lookups they offer. And you might choose a county where we don't have anybody yet. If that's the case, we have an alternative way that you can search and potentially still get help. But if you see a list of people there, maybe they're offering an obituary lookup or a city directory or a yearbook or something like that, you click through to find out more about the person behind the lookup offering. What's their background, their experience? You can look at a profile that they've created. What's their area of expertise, and what have their previous customers said about their service? Are they responsive? Do they get back to you quickly? Do they seem to know what they're doing? Was the record provided in a professional and quality kind of fashion? When you've established some trust for who the person is, you can go ahead and fill out a form they've created, which allows you to submit the information they need, to retrieve the record you want. There's a fairly straightforward e-commerce interface where you would provide payment information. That might be PayPal or credit card. It's all done in the usual secure kind of fashion. And the provider then receives your request. They take a look at it. They accept it or decline it, depending on how it fits their capabilities. And then they'll begin the process of retrieving the record for you. They'll communicate back and forth through the site, let you know their progress. And then when they find the record, usually it's in paper form. If that's the case, they'll make a copy, and they'll scan that image and upload it to your account on the site for you to retrieve and download. Sometimes it's a microfilm record, and they might scan it directly, too. At that point, you can download the record, put it in your genealogy software if you want, share it with others, whatever you'd like to do. That's one path through the site that's probably the typical one that the majority of people go through. But as I mentioned, you'll find, and again, the site hasn't been around that long, that we don't have providers for every locality. And if you are looking for Dodge County, Wisconsin records, and we don't have anybody there yet, you'll be prompted to fill out a custom request. So you can basically say, GSC, you don't have anybody to do this, but this is what I need for this area. This is the kind of record I'm looking for, the information I already need. This is the rough time frame I'd like it in, and my target price. And that request is then posted on the site and is accessible to all of our providers. They'll get little email notifications mentioning that you've posted that. And they can look and they can say, gee, you know, that's a bit farther away than maybe I typically want to travel, or I haven't really tried researching that kind of record before, or I hadn't thought to offer that, but that's something I can do. That's well within my capabilities. I'll submit a quote on this, and they'll click through to to say what they can do and how much they think they can do it for. The client can then accept or decline that, and the transaction occurs in that way. So we're not limited to just the lookups that providers currently offer, but you can post your own requests. And that's often a great way to engage a researcher to help you solve the problem that you're looking for. Open-ended kind of problems that maybe a single straightforward lookup might not cover. So those are the two basic ways to interact with the site from the client point of view.
And, you know, from my experience, the site is very easily navigatable. One of the easiest
sites. We're working on it.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, from a general perspective, it's very easy to navigate and very easy to find what you're looking for and, to contact the people that you want to contact if you have a question or want to ask them if this is something they can do. And, my experience, and I've used a number of them. How many providers are there? Do you know?
No, I don't have a recent count, but I think it's only about 120 so far in the 3 months that we've been up. I think it's somewhere along those lines. That's people who have formally created a profile and listed lookups with us. There are a number of others who kind of maybe haven't filled out a formal profile, but we do notice quoting occasionally on requests, and more seem to come online every day. But that's right about the number that we've had come on in the past since the beginning of the year. I noticed that you were mentioning customer requests. I noticed in my email that I was just notified that someone is looking for a death record in New Mexico for a particular individual, and she's just posted a customer request for that on the site right now. We don't have too many New Mexico providers yet, and so I suspect she probably went through that process and has noticed that. And so now what we do when we see something like that is we try to go specifically recruit people ourselves in those areas from among local genealogy societies or other possibilities so that somebody can get their custom request fulfilled as soon as possible.
So, you know, as far as the client base, I mean, I would suspect to have professionals like myself have people who are doing their own genealogical research. Pretty much anybody. It's really a very open site for anybody that's really looking for something specific within their research.
We tend to find people come to us once they've already tried something else, maybe it's Ancestry or Family Search or something along those lines, because, as you said, they kind of need to have some specific idea of what they want in mind so they can form an actionable query on the site, or know what kind of record type to search for. If they come to us with a question like, "Well, gee, I'm really looking for help finding out who my family is," that's a little bit too open-ended for the most part for the service that we offer. There, if you haven't made a lot of headway yourself, you might want to go to a local local genealogical society and perhaps get help there, a local family history center. Or perhaps engage the services of a professional to ask the right question, to interview you about what your goals are before you begin formal research. But if you have made some headway, if you have a good feel for where you want a record from and what kind of record you think might help you, that's when we're best in a position to help. And those are the kind of people who we've tended to attract thus far. I would call them serious amateurs. It would be the maybe 75% or so of the client base. The other 25%, as you said, Susan, are people like yourself looking to maximize their time and expertise to focus on the unique problem-solving capabilities they have and don't want to spend their time for the client's costs driving 2 or 3 hours to a distant repository when someone like one of our providers can retrieve the record for them fairly quickly and easily.
Right. I mean, you know, from a professional's point of view, it's the best kept secret in the world.
We're working on that.
And, you know, and there are, open areas where there are no people that are, able to provide some of the services that we're looking for. You need to work on New Jersey.
Yes, I agree.
Oh,
I have lots
God.
Of ancestors from there.
Oh, yeah. That is one of the worst states to try to do research in ever.
No, so, I'll take that as a personal challenge, Susan. You,
please,
it's very relevant to me.
I found one person, and I've sent 14 emails, and
no response.
Haven't got no response. So they're either really swamped because there's nobody doing New Jersey research.
Uh-huh.
But there are particular states that are very, very difficult. Pennsylvania is another one I find to be another tough state.
I was gratified to see somebody sign up from Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, just yesterday. So hopefully we're making some headway there. But you're absolutely right. That's food and tough.
Yes.
I hope they head out there to the genealogy conference.
There are some tough states to do research in.
Conversely, that's a real opportunity for somebody who's there, right?
It's a wonderful opportunity, and I think that it'd be a wonderful opportunity for you, too.
Agreed.
Because, you know, those are the places where people really need the most help.
I agree. I get to clean your request all the time.
Yeah, I will put in my request.
Thank you.
New Jersey.
Okay. Well, that's ideal market research for us, right? I mean, just the kind of thing we need.
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed at how many projects I get that are, you know, have a lot of New Jersey based.
Sure.
And, you know, naturalization records, you know, death records.
Absolutely.
Marriage records, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's one of the whole genealogy and the internet, you know, is one of the few things that really took off with the advent of the internet, you know, 20 some odd years ago, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing, and you know, new people come up with new ideas like what you all have done that, you know, really are there to really benefit all of us in the genealogy world. You know, it's really exciting to watch how things have progressed over these many, many years.
Isn't it? It's fun.
It is fun. It is fun. And, you know, there are a bunch of, you know, new sites. And I think, you know, Genlighten is at the top of the list of what it really can do to provide. And, too, you know, you and I have had some discussion about, you know, those who get involved in the genealogy and whether you know, subscriptions to every subscriber service out there, you know, or whether or not maybe, you know, providing, you know, some lookups and some of those other subscription-based services might be beneficial as well. And that's something, you know, we have talked about.
Yes, that it was really eye-opening for me to sense from you and from several of our providers just how much of a need there is to navigate a site like Ancestry. So I don't want to give you know tons of attention to a competitor that I respect a great deal, but Ancestry can the search process can often be baffling for people, and you might type in a name and a locality there and not be able to find a record because it's indexed with a name spelled just slightly differently. And so there are many people who have just honed their ability to use wildcards and other kind of searches on Ancestry to find things that their skills are just so valuable, and they've come to us and said, gee, I can look things up on Footnote or Ancestry and help people who otherwise would not be able to find their person for years. And that's a valuable service, and we are thinking very hard about how we can offer that kind of service, as you suggested, to our clients. It's something we're really looking seriously at as a way to expand our offerings.
You know, and it amazes me, and I mean that, you know, it when I take on some of my clients and, you know, they say, I can't find this, and
yeah.
I go to Ancestry and it just pops right out and
bam.
And I'm thinking, you know, where were they looking? You know, and I mean,
true.
You know,
it's true,
and it is true, and it's you know, and it's really no fault of their own. It is an indexing situation, and you know, because that's the way all the sites are driven, is by indexing. And, you know, some of the indexes are terribly wrong, and I know that I make it a point to correct, you know, everything I find that I know is an error when I find it. Because you look for one name and it's actually under another,
the skills, you know, divergent thinking to be able to imagine what other variant spellings there might be, that's not something that occurs to everybody. And you've obviously honed that skill, and others have too, but the first-time user of Ancestry often is clueless about all the different ways their ancestor's name might have been spelled or misspelled, as you said, by the index.
Right, and the other thing I think people don't understand, and this is what we were discussing too, mm-hmm. is that you can't really use just one site to do your research.
No.
And, you know, if you have subscriptions to, you know, all of the sites, it can get pretty costly.
Yes, sir. Yep.
And, you know, and especially if all you really need is one record off of a site.
Good point.
So, you know, these are things that, you know, the lookups and professionals really can provide for people is the ability to find things pretty quick.
Right.
And, you know, I've been amazed at how quick, you know, the providers that you have on these lookups have been mm-hmm. able to turn things around. And, you know, I mean, we've done, I think, everything from death records to obituaries to immigration records to, you know,
you've really used a bunch of our services.
Yeah, and I've got one right now that I'm praying that's going to open up one of my cases that I've just pretty much brick walled. You know, I mean,
I had a cool experience along those lines with a guy who I met at a tech meetup. I'm obviously, in addition to being in the genealogy world, I try to spend a lot of time networking with people who are web developers and designers and who are building web startups like we are. And I met one guy, kind of well known in the field. He was head honcho of a big customized T-shirt company here in Chicago a ways back. And he said to me, "Gee, you do genealogy, right? Could you find this great great uncle that I was supposedly named after in Colorado? I don't know anything about him except that he died in a car crash and has the same name as I do." And I thought to myself, "Wow, you know, if we could find this for this guy, this would be huge. This would be he'd blog about it, he'd tweet about it. It would be good for us." And I went and I looked on our site and we didn't seem to have anybody for the particular area where I thought his ancestor might have been from. So I started off in Ancestry. I looked in census records, but I couldn't find the obituary that I really needed to prove it was the right guy. And I eventually did find one of our providers from Colorado Springs who was able to turn around the request basically in 2 days, even though it was the weekend when I contacted her. And I was just, it was really satisfying to see that I could use our site for something to solve a problem that I had for this individual. It was gratifying, and the lady involved was just could not have been more helpful. Just really kind of cool. So, yeah, it's been very satisfying for us to be involved with.
Well, I can imagine it. You know, I mean, the people I've worked with have been just terrific. Just terrific.
Well, glad to hear it.
It's
hard to know how to find those people, but boy, when you find them, you feel so grateful to track somebody like that down.
So what are your future plans?
Great question. We have a couple things in the works. Well, of course, this is a part-time thing for my wife and I, or for me especially. I just have a day job as an optoelectronic engineer, and then I work on this nights and weekends. We're trying to get to the point where, you know, it's feasible for us to do it full-time. And so that's where we've been working on what kind of features we could offer, what kind of things we could add that would bring in some additional traffic and get the word out. One of the things we're working on is a connection with the Family History Library catalog. For a lot of people, the microfilm that that is available through branches of the Mormon Church's Family History Library in Salt Lake. Many people find those films to be of great use, but it can take a while to track down the right one, and you may not have a family history center near you, or if you do, it may take a while to get to order in a film there, and you may not know in advance if it's even going to be useful to you. We have a number of providers who live close to local family history centers, or they live in Salt Lake City and have access to the huge resources there. And we're trying to create a way where a client could search that catalog, find a film that was relevant to their request, and then see a list of providers who could basically go and get that, scan that film and digitize it that day or the next day. So in other words, get a really rapid response on a film that might be helpful to them rather than waiting 3 or 4 weeks to request the film and have it come into the local center. It would have to be priced in a way that it was competitive with ordering the film, and we're working on making that happen. But that ability to reproduce basically the Family History Library catalog on our site and index it to our providers and their connections, that's something that we're focusing on here over the next 3 or 4 months.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. We're also trying to make it,
you know, because I mean, one of the recent things that I did was have, you know, I went in and I found the films and I found the film numbers and, you know, just provided the film numbers for 2 death records and, you know, they were back the same day, actually, that afternoon.
Yes. Yeah, I think I know the provider
involved. Being able to tie it in with the catalog would be superb.
That's where we're hoping to head. And we've had some conversations with them, with the Family Search people about that, and they're just totally supportive of us doing that. They're not, you know, super exclusive about their content. They want it to get out there and have people have access to it, and they've been helpful and cooperative. So we're recruiting some more engineering talent to work on that here over the next few months.
Great. And I assume that you're continuing to find providers. I know I've referred to you. I don't know if they've signed up, but
they have, and we really appreciate it. We're heading out to the NGS, to the National Genealogical Society conference in Salt Lake at the end of April, and we hope to find a bunch of people there. We also are traveling to some more close-by conferences. There's one the Indiana State Genealogical Society and the Wisconsin Genealogical Society both have conferences coming up that we'll be attending. And that's we find we get a really high caliber of people there. But by that I mean they're serious, they're conscientious, and they seem to have an attitude of really wanting to be helpful. They take real joy in the happy dance that comes when their clients find something that really opens up a new avenue of research for them. And we just delight in finding people like that, and that's why we like to go out to these local genealogical conferences.
So, you know, I think probably the last question is that, you know, you make your money off of a quote-unquote service fee. I guess it is.
Yeah, transaction fee, exactly.
A transaction fee. And I think I figured it out. I think it's what, 10%?
Yeah, we do our payment processing through PayPal.
Right.
And PayPal, great company, but boy, they've got a marvelous business model for them.
Right.
And it basically, because most of the transactions on our site are relatively small, they tend to be in the $10, $12, $20 kind of range. They take a sizable percentage of that for as part of the credit card or the PayPal processing. And so the handling charge takes care of that and helps us to offset that. We also receive a commission from our providers.
Okay.
So they, for instance, they might charge, say they charge $20 to retrieve a particular record. We would receive 15% or $3 from that transaction. So that's the business model. It's a transaction fee model, a little bit from... We ask for a little bit of income or revenue from both sides of the two-sided market, the handling charge from the client and the commission from the provider.
Right.
And so far that's worked out for us, and that allows us to not charge listing fees, so the providers don't get charged at all to put their listings on our site, as would be the case on some other sites, and they don't incur any expense unless somebody orders something from them. Likewise, on the client side, there's no subscription fee, so you don't pay for things that you don't find.
And you bring out the things that you don't find. In a lot of cases, and obviously there's some that it does not,
not all genealogical searches are going to result in a document.
There you go.
So, clients don't always recognize this as the case because, of course, they're disappointed, but, gee, sometimes it's just not there, even though you think it ought to be. And so many of our providers built in a two-tier pricing structure. They'll charge a certain fee for a successful result, what you and they consider a successful result, and then they'll charge a smaller fee, usually around 50% of that or whatever, for a search which they perform to the best of their ability. They drive there, they put the microfilm on, and it's just not there for some reason. They charge a not found fee in that case. And that compensates them for the time that they spent, maybe not, or the gas or the costs, but not necessarily for their time, full time, since it didn't yield the result that you were after. That's something that's another unique aspect, I think, of the model that many of our providers use.
And, you know, that's something that people don't understand. I mean, you know, then whenever you start doing research you do research for other people, there are no guarantees that you're going to find what you are looking for.
That's right.
And in many cases, I mean, I've either come out with a record that doesn't belong to me.
Mm-hmm.
Which we do. I mean, you know, we order a record, the name's right, the date's right, the year's right, and we get the record, and it doesn't belong to this family.
No.
And we run into that from time to time, and I think I ordered two death records, and one of them was the right person, and the other one was not.
Right. You don't see that on Who Do You Think You Are, do you? They don't tend to show the negative results.
No, they don't. No, they
but
don't.
They do happen.
Yes. What they do show is they show the process and speed it up time.
And the satisfaction and the real light on the people's faces.
And
that's real. That's
it is real. And that find and being part of that find is a very special thing.
Isn't it?
It really is. And it's you know, I think Matthew Broderick really in this last episode put it right. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm beginning to, you know, put a story behind the lives. And that's what genealogy really is all about. It's really putting the story behind the lives of our ancestors. Records are pretty cold.
Sure.
But when you start to really look at the records and you focus on the records and you put all the records together and you build a timeline and you see, you know, where they were, what they were doing, how they were doing it, what was going on in the world at the time they were doing all this stuff, you know, all of a sudden you really, really build a story. And it's almost, I don't know about you, Dean, but, you know, it almost kind of like runs like a film in my head.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm working on different families. I mean, you know, if I can put a face to the name, I mean, you know, I've got this whole movie going on in my head as I'm, you know, trying to research. And, you know, that's part of what the research is all about is you run the movie and you get, you know, the projector stops and you say, okay, where do we go next?
Exactly.
And
so satisfying, though.
It really is. It is so important. And I think that, you know, in some of the previous shows over, you know, the last few weeks, we've talked about how important it is to get back to our roots and you know, and especially in today's time and how things are going, that we need to take, you know, learn some lessons of some of this, of how some of these people lived, when, you know, 100 years ago, 150 years ago. And we need to start getting back to our basics because I think we've kind of lost, track of, who we are and the family units and unhealthy eating, you know, not living off the land, so to speak.
Right.
So there's a lot of things that have kind of gone south a little bit in everybody's lives, I think. And getting back to our roots learning how our ancestors really lived and made it and had, you know, lived their lives is so very important to all of us.
I agree.
Closing remarks, Dean.
Sure.
Shall we, one more time, why don't you give out the website address?
Sure, be happy to. It's genlighten.com, www.genlighten.com. And it's not a subscription site, but you have the opportunity to request genealogical records that the individuals will go and retrieve from local repositories, and it provides you with a digital image in almost all cases of the record they find to help you with your research.
Very, very valuable service for all researchers, no matter whether you're doing it yourself or you're doing it for other people. Great resource, Dean. Thanks for sharing this hour. I apologize for my technical issues.
Not at all.
Don't understand, in some cases, why I keep having them. I keep fixing them, and then they keep coming back. So I'm going to blame it on the cable company. How about that?
There you go. Sounds good.
They deserve
it. I really appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate yours, too. And, again, www.genlighten.com. Dean Richardson's been my guest. I'm Susan King. We've enjoyed having everybody. I hope you will give Jen Lighten a visit for your next genealogical resource need. It's a great service.
Thanks again.
We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect with Susan E. King. Each week we will focus on the spiritual journey of connecting ourselves with our ancestors. Join us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific right here on BBS Radio. For upcoming show information, you can visit Susan's website at www.susaneking.com.